And welcome to special edition number 20 of What's On Joe Mine. We're a fan cast about the world of G.I. Joe. This is a very unique special edition that we are diving into today. We don't really have a topic.
Do we ever really have a topic?
It's whenever Justin breaks news, I think. But let me tell you about the concept. Was approached a couple months ago by Craig from the Fooshcast, and he had this idea of going back and reviewing your pilot episode and then discussing how time has changed the news that you actually reported at the time.
What is Craig doing with this idea?
Nothing.
Yes, interesting. Interesting.
Yes, because I edited our pilot episode, which... I can't begin to tell you how bad the pilot episode was. I had to re-listen to it again. Then I had to re-edit it the proper way. It doesn't sound that much better. So I'm like, I am not re-editing that pilot for absolutely nothing. So really your first step here is to stop, go back into Podbean or go back into your MP3 player, iTunes, what have you, and look for episode 0.5, as titled by Chuck. Very good choice, Chuck. 0.5. And listen to Pilot Remix of What's On Joe Mine. Then come on back, and we'll pick back up. Bye. Go, go. Go, go, go. Joining me as always is our showrunner, Chuck. Chuck, how are you?
Gary, I'm a little confused.
Chuck, how can you be confused? This is a special edition.
Okay, well, the thing is, it's like as we're discussing flashbacks. So, is it basically now, or am I dealing with the time frame before I realized you guys were a bunch of flaming douchebags?
It's probably a very short time frame, Chuck.
Bazinga!
How long did it take you to figure that one out there, Swifty? I wouldn't be letting that get out as public information there, Chuck. I'm going to come and put you on a short bus, ride you off somewhere.
Oh, please. I've been riding the short bus for 33 years. Wait.
Also joining us from the news desk, as we will discuss news, just nothing really current in this episode, is Mike. Mike, how are you?
Oh, you know me. I'm just hanging out eating candy.
And is this leftover Halloween candy? Or?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes.
Candy of choice tonight is?
I just finished a little... fun-size Snickers bar.
Those are not fun-size.
I was going to say.
No, like a fun-size Snickers bar is actually like 2 pounds.
Exactly.
But I will read the label verbatim and call it the fun-size Snickers bar. And I do have another one for later in the show. I'm trying to watch the intake a little bit, but damn it, it's little Snickers bars.
You know, according to noted author James Cavanaugh, this next man is fun-sized. It's Justin. How are you, Justin?
I'm very fun-sized.
Justin, are you about ready to go back in time, get into the DeLorean, and look at some things from April 2011?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I must admit, I listened to the episode earlier today to prepare, and I was a little disappointed by the lack of Justin Bell in this particular episode. So
it was Justin Bell light. In fact, I think it was even Mike Zeri light.
Yeah.
I dare call that the gravest mistake that you'd made in that pilot episode. There was no one reminding anyone about previous Super Bowls.
Those hadn't even happened yet. Hey, so.
I'm just glad we didn't bring back that guy that was on. Oh, my God.
Hey, say hi, Greg.
Oh, hi.
We had to bring back the original showrunner, the man who put the original pilot together. It's Greg. Greg, how are you?
Great. How's everybody doing?
Greg's good to have you back, man.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Greg is taller in person.
Steve, we missed
you. Than you would expect.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and do the Greg's tall joke again once more?
I just did it. Were you not paying attention? Did you miss that?
I heard it, but did you want to go ahead and just finish it to completion?
I don't want Mike finishing anything to completion.
That was what I had right now.
So now you know the concept of the podcast, what we're trying to do tonight. Who's all on it? First question, gentlemen. We'll send it around the horn. Justin won the coin toss backstage, and he's first. Yes, how sir. Has the show changed since the pilot episode?
Well, there's 100% more Justin Bell, which is a good thing. Really, I think that the great thing about the podcast, and I was pretty surprised, I hadn't listened to episode one, or it was, now technically this is the pilot episode, so it was kind of episode zero, is that right? Yeah.
Episode zero.
Yes. I hadn't listened to that in a long time, and I was really surprised at how quickly the camaraderie kind of formed together. You were already really bouncing off each other very well, even in that very first episode, which I thought was a great sign of things to come, because a lot of things these shows don't necessarily realize is that it's not always who's got the latest information, who's got the best interviews, who's got the snappiest sound effects. Sometimes it's just how well the people talk and chat back and forth with each other, and I thought you guys did that really well. Of course, I listened to the remastered version earlier today, so it had all those intros, it had the bumpers, it had the ending music, and I think that was kind of the major change between those very early episodes and some later ones. Just sound a little bit more polished later on, but I think the best thing about the show is that the spirit and the core of the show has not really changed a whole lot. It's just guys getting together and talking about G.I. Joe and shooting the breeze. It's been great. I think obviously some of the caliber of the guests. It was really funny listening to the remastered pilot and hearing your guys' first plug for Marauder Gunrunners and saying, hey, this is somebody we could get on the show. That's great. And now, what did we get him? 67? About a year and a half later?
So. It took us 90 episodes later, but yes, we got him.
Yes. We got him. So that was kind of interesting to hear that. Very cool. I think that's the best thing about it, is that it still felt very natural. Didn't feel at all artificial. Didn't feel like you guys were forcing anything. And very knowledgeable. I mean, you were getting items from China that were topical, stuff that we still are doing today, kind of up on the current events, kind of told people where to find you. It was very quick and to the point. It was good. I think it's been pretty standard since then, just some better effects, a little bit more polish. It's good stuff.
Chuck, how about you? You had 100% Chuck back in that episode.
Yeah,
90% too much.
Bazinga.
I think the easiest way to explain it is we started out as the Beatles in 1962 with Love Me Do, and then to where we are now, where it's the Beatles who, in the late 60s, we all can't stand each other, but we're producing works of art like Abbey Road.
And you forgot Coked Out of Our Minds.
Well, Greg's already split for the solo career.
It's Greg.
Not going very well.
Greg is like Pete Best.
Oh.
No, he winds up dead in a hotel room 3 years later.
Chuck, go ahead and finish on your serious notes, though.
No, that was it.
That was it? Wow.
He spent.
That's what it is. I mean, let's be honest.
Beatles allegory.
I'm Chuck, and I'm out.
Took him 90 episodes to come up with that. Come on, give him a break.
Justin had mentioned just the caliber of guests that have gotten as the show has gotten running and the number of people listening. Just the, like, who would have thought starting out some of the people you guys would have got on? It just boggles my mind, especially like Justin mentioned about Marauder John, the fact that he finally was on and get to hear the guy after years of buying his stuff and talking to him on the message boards. That was just a treat from my side to listen to. You get more comfortable with people by talking every week, and it helps that it's a weekly and now a semi-monthly podcast.
We'll get back to the week.
And it's good to talk to people every week, and you build that rapport up, and you guys couldn't tell. I mean, the funny thing is you guys have met a couple times in person, some not even in person at all, but you sound like you've known each other for years. It's always good to hear you guys.
A little Chuck goes a long way.
That's what she said. No! Mike, to the newest member of the crew, tell us. How has this show changed since the pilot?
Again, my thoughts are going to be a lot like Justin's. If you'll remember, I've known Gary for many, many moons now. And so I've kind of been the bug in his ear since the beginning. Gary's kind of like, yeah, you know, you used to do radio. How does this sound? And how does this sound? And what do you think about this? And so I would tell him, and usually my answer was, shut up, that's crap.
And when can I be on the show?
And when am I on the program again? But... In fact, it was usually, when am I on the program again? That's crap, and when am I on the program again? But no, I think that what Justin said is true. It's that the strength of this program is that it hasn't changed. I think we do a good job of keeping that feel of the first episode alive. It's a news program about a toy, and we're all a bunch of grown men, so it's going to be informative, and it's going to be silly. I don't think we've really gotten too full of ourselves because of it. I think a lot of people are quick to give us this high place in the community, and we still continue to just smack one another around every chance we get, and it's all in fun. We take it seriously without taking ourselves seriously. That's probably the best thing I can say about what we do here.
I am absolutely amazed at how the listenership has grown. Two episodes ago, 16,000 downloads. That's a small NBA arena, isn't it, Mike?
It's better than your average Toronto Raptors game.
That's just mind-boggling. Around the world, the letters that we've received from people, not just our own countrymen, but people from other countries that say they listen to this program. The shows that we've gone to this year, the people that walk up to Justin and myself and to Mike and to Greg at CoilCon, when people will come up and say, yo, I heard you from the podcast. I thought we'd be three and done and out. And I'm amazed that we are coming up on our 100th combined episode here soon. I think a lot of that has to do that we have a good team. I really throw myself into the editing to make it sound as professional as possible. And I hope that is heard when you guys hear the program, especially you guys, my co-hosts, and then all the listeners out there, when you hear the podcast. And if you think it sounds professional, that's probably about the best compliment you can give me, because when you just heard that pilot, it couldn't have been any more amateur back then. Funny thing about the pilot, when I was editing the pilot, I think when we first did the show, it was like right about 46 minutes. Does it sound about right, Greg?
Yeah, something like that.
When I shrunk down all of the awkward pauses, I shrunk it down to less than 35 minutes. So there was a lot of wasted space in there and awkward pauses, and that's kind of my feelings on how the show has changed. All that I have to say with a bunch of thanks, and I want to say that probably all you guys echo this with me as well, just thanks for listening and thanks for helping us. Thanks for all the feedback, good or bad. If it wasn't for you guys, I'm sure we wouldn't be doing this anymore. Shall we move on to the news?
Yes, let's move on to the news.
On to the news with Beachhead Mike.
Gathering the best G.I. Joe news from all points around the fandom and community, it's the weekly What's on Joe Mind News Desk with your host and anchor, Beachhead Mike.
All right. Should I try and go retro on the news?
I'm sensing Ted's coming out here, isn't he?
I was figuring we could ratchet it back to, like, the 30s. Dateline 2011!
That might be a bit of a stretch. If Ted wants to come out and help you, go right ahead.
I've already got a shout enough tonight. As it is, this is an awkward news segment. Yes, back on show number zero, we had the reaction to the Sky Striker price point at Target. We were wondering, how did it sell at the $40 price point, etc., etc. Thoughts on the subject?
Gentlemen.
Well, the conversation about it was pretty cool, because I think it was the crux of your discussion was that a Target computer revealed that it was going to be $34.99, and I think everybody was in a consensus saying that seemed like a pretty fair price. And here we sit a year and a half later, something like that, and it's still not in Target stores so much, but it can still be found in clearance at some places. TJ Maxx, I guess, has been carrying it now for $24.99. It's still sitting around out there. Reports seem to be that it maybe didn't sell quite as well as we were hoping / anticipating, but I still think for my G.I. Joe dollar, I think $34.99 was a very fair price considering the size of the vehicle, and I think people aren't getting it for $24.99 or the Wait for Ross crowd. It's kind of a disappointment just because they did finally answer some of our claims, and I know there's people out there that'll say, oh, well, we wanted a two-seater, but we wanted a working parachute, but we wanted this and that. We don't live in 1984 anymore, so you really got to kind of temper your enthusiasm and realize we're not going to get some of this same stuff that we got back then, not to mention the fact the figures are just a little bit bigger, and to make a two-seater cockpit would probably have required a much larger vehicle. I still think the price was fair, and I think your discussion about it was pretty much spot on, and by all accounts, when it first hit retail shelves, it seemed to be selling pretty well. I mean, you would read posts online of people buying five or six of them at a chunk, but I do think part of that was a little bit of a wake-up call saying that, well, it doesn't matter how much G.I. Joe fans are demanding these things, they're not going to fly off shelves just willy-nilly, even if we're answering a lot of collectors' concerns and hopes.
It's funny because I actually listened back to the podcast yesterday, and we said Target had it listed for $34, but when I saw it in Toys R Us, and even now, it's up like $39.99.
Yeah.
And you actually covered something Justin and I was going to ask, is that, like, do we know how well it's sold? Because I heard stories of near fistfights breaking out between people trying to buy this in, like, Walmart, and then it's like I hear it's on clearance at Target for $19.95.
Everything is in demand when it first gets released. I mean, you hear stories about any of this. I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head of something that, you know, within the first week of release, people were absolutely breaking their backs for it, and then once it was out for a month, they couldn't care less, and they were waiting for it to go to Ross. But
Furby.
Okay. Well, I was thinking of G.I. Joe.
Oh, you were
a little bit more topical.
Oh, you were thinking of a G.I. Joe thing. All right. I was just trying to help. I'm just really curious as to Hasbro's opinion. How well did it sell?
Rumor was out of JoeCon, they seemed to indicate that they were hoping to have some kind of surprise as far as that goes at Toy Fair next year. I mean, that was a long time ago, and that's still a long ways to go, so who knows for sure, but I think some of the Hasbro reps there were talking a little bit about hoping to keep doing the one vintage-themed vehicle a year.
In full disclosure, I never bought a Sky Striker. I got the one that
you
was the...
bad bastard.
The San Diego Comic-Con Star Striker.
Mike, cut his mic.
I'm sorry. I'm a bad boy. Hit me.
Greg, hit him.
Say I would, but I think you like it too much.
I think it showed that, like Justin said, that the demand might be there, people might be clamoring for it, but it still has to sell to kids. It can't just sell to collectors, and unfortunately that may end up biting us in the butt later on, but I think it's good for Hasbro to realize that, and hopefully they're carrying that forward, that they can try to make, say, like the Ghost Dog 2, and they made that a $40 or a $50 item. It probably wouldn't sell as much as if they put it at, the, what did it sell for, $25 for the Retaliation line, or
yes, $24.99, yeah.
It's probably going to sell quite a bit more at a lower price point. Even if it isn't as great of a vehicle, it's still cheaper is better. Someone's going to look at that and say, well, for $25, I can give it a try instead of if it's $35, $40, $45. Yeah. Granted, the Ghost Hawk 2 and the Sky Striker are completely different animals for how good of vehicles they actually are. But for some people, they look at it on the shelf and they compare them, and they're pretty much apples and apples. So it's a little unfortunate.
When you get a kid in the store shelves, they're going to look and say, oh, those are two G.I. Joe planes. They're not going to know that Sky Striker came out in 1984 or whatever. They're just going to compare them on their surface. So I think that's a fine comparison.
And I will say one good thing about the Sky Striker, and that's come up with Cobra stickers, is that they've been putting out just tons and tons of different sets. So you can basically customize the look however you want, making it look like anything from
Robotech to Top
Gun. There you go, yep. That's very cool. I'm glad they decided to do that.
Greg has the entire Wisconsin Air National Guard.
Yes, all four of them.
I thought that was just a biplane.
It's there for crop dusting.
Hey, it's multi-purpose.
It pulls the banner over the Packers.
Yes.
keeps the bugs off the cheese. Anyhow, yeah. I mean, the Sky Striker was at retail for over a year. And still wound up hitting clearance and still wound up hitting Ross. I think that by saying we'd like to hear what Hasbro has to say about sales is kind of a gentlemanly way of saying this didn't really sell well at all. It is too bad, but I think Greg hit that point right on the head. It probably sold incredibly well in the 25 to 40 demographic and just didn't sell well enough to the under 12 demographic. I know I've said this somewhere along the line. I think there's just a magic line with toys right now. I think it's $10 on an action figure and $25 on a playset or vehicle. And I think that's what kind of the imaginary line that parents are willing to spend for kids to be quiet on a shopping trip, or that uncles and aunts are willing to spend on birthdays or Christmas. Whatever it is, those seem to be the barriers, and once you push past those price points, you're just not going to sell to the general public right now, unless you've just got something that is amazing, ridiculous, crazy. And in that respect, G.I. Joe's a little bit a victim of its own success, and it was the first one to do this sort of thing in the 3 3/4 scale 30 years ago, and so it's not new anymore. It's not the hot thing anymore. It was the hot thing a generation ago, and we've moved on to, like Chuck said, Furbies. But even Furbies, that's 10, 12 years ago now, and they've got a facelift, and they're languishing on the shelves. You can't capture the same lightning in a bottle twice. And so I think that if we're going to see larger vehicles, they're going to be exclusive type deals. They're going to be at a little bit of higher price point. But truthfully, that Sky Striker is cool enough. If it had actually been at $40, I'd have still bought one anyway. As it is, most places wind up selling it for $29 or $34.99, and I think it's a great toy for that value. But times are different now. And it's kind of a dinosaur, and it's a really cool-looking dinosaur that's fun to play with and have the Joes fly around, but a Sky Striker by itself is never going to be that hot toy again.
I'm going to echo with the consensus here. It probably didn't sell as well as Hasbro wanted it to do. Probably means we probably aren't going to see a dual cockpit Sky Striker on the horizon anytime soon. Let's talk about the good things, what we did learn about the Sky Striker. We did have one of our guests in the past, Katrina, worked on the decals for the Sky Striker. I gotta say, the different decal set made it unique. You can make your Sky Striker unique. Now it's pretty cool. But in the long and short of it, sales weren't as great as we thought they were. That's my take on the Sky Striker.
Next news item. Next news item. The second news item on that original program was the Hasbro Roundtable of Unreleased Items at JoeCon 2011. So think back to last JoeCon where we had that big case full of unreleased and concept items. Now go back a whole other year. That's what we were talking about. That's what they were talking about without the educated tomes of Justin and myself on that original podcast.
Well, I think I'm the only person that was actually at that con that's on the show. Justin, were you at that show?
2011, I was not. No, I was in Kansas City.
I think the only thing that really came out of that roundtable of unreleased items was the convention set for 2012. They had the IGs there. Everything else was just kind of so out there that it wasn't going to come out.
A lot of the stuff there was very clearly very early mock-ups. Like some of it was just artwork. I mean, obviously, they had the surveillance port with the Python Patrol, Televiper, and Cobra Trooper, which then ended up coming out in the 2011 concept.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff was just concept art. It was so early in the production process that it just seems unlikely that any of that stuff would come out. Some of that stuff was so cool. The mock-up of the Resolute Flag, the repainted Maulers, the different versions of the Pit Mobile Command Center.
Yep, new his tank.
Just some very, very cool items that make you wonder what could have been, kind of. The thing that really kind of sticks in my mind here is those two Mauler tanks. I just think were... That was very... Well, yeah. Besides the whole tie back to the G.I. Joe Collectors Club, considering that the pictures we see there, maybe they're drawings, but they almost look like they're product shots, at least the figure parts of them do. The tanks, it's kind of tough to tell. I'm looking at generalsjoes.com right now. I've got the slideshow mirrored here, and I'll make sure we put that in the show notes. I'll put a link up to that in the show notes so people can easily find it. But I just look at that Mauler, and I'm just kind of wondering if perhaps it does exist in some tooled form. I mean, obviously, after the club tried to remake it back in 2007. So part of me is kind of looking at that and wondering a little bit when Hasbro indicates they might be doing something vehicle-wise for 2013, if maybe we'll see something like that. Just because the mock-up shots on this slideshow just look like actual tooled product shots. They don't look like drawings or early concepts, so... That's simply pure hypothesis on my part. I always love seeing these concept things. The ones that really broke my heart here, obviously, are the Sigma 6 Overkill and the Sigma 6 Scarlet, which were both very cool items. Overkill looks like he was pretty far along in the production process. Scarlet, not so much.
Mike, does that break your heart?
It should. Dude, Overkill, you can freaking take them apart and you can hang them by cables from a little like console center. It's freaking awesome.
Dude.
It's pretty cool if you like that 8-inch doll stuff.
Love that 8-inch doll stuff.
You've heard it here first. Justin's calling the Mauler for Toy Fair 2013.
There you go. Write that down. Somebody write that down. Mark tape.
Truthfully, if they stick to the whole let's put out a vintage vehicle for the fanboys, that's as good a pick as any. If you're thinking about something that could fit in that $40 price point, I'd go out on the limb and say that was my logical guess. Basically, when that doesn't happen, the email that you need to write to is justinbell@whatsonjoemind.com.
Let's check that.
And I'd just like to remind everyone that even before Justin was on the show, I was the flag bearer for Sigma 6.
Like all the Sigma 6 fans are going, whew.
Dodge that bullet.
Thank God. Next news item.
News item number 3 was the reaction to the Hasbro quarter 1 stock reports from 2011. Not a good quarter for the folks at the Big H.
I'm going to take that bankrupt sound effect from Wheel of Fortune. Oh! No whammies. Oh, man, they had a horrible quarter that time, and that was all had to do with the hub. The funny thing is you fast forward to when we just got the latest one in our hands, what was it, a month or so ago? It's not much better. Yeah. It's better, but it's not much better. If the reaction back then was to the hub, I want to say that Hasbro was down like 7% this time around, something like that. Please correct me if I'm wrong, if something's looking it up. I got to say that lack of Joe product might want to fill in a couple percent there.
Right, yeah. I think there was double-digit losses in boys' toys, which was kind of the thing that most folks were remarking about with the latest reports. I mean, the big 71% crazy drop from 2011 wasn't necessarily, I don't think, that the hub wasn't successful. It's just that Hasbro invested so much money in starting up the hub that it just ended up being a big, huge downward spiral for that particular event, but the Hub seems to be gaining steam a little bit. Viewership is increasing quarter after quarter. So, and yeah, the latest financial report still wasn't great, especially for domestic boys toys, but Christmas is around the corner, I guess.
I think we said it at the time, too. It just seemed to be an overestimation on their end of what it takes to run a cable television station of that magnitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, the Hub, it's not a startup station. It used to be Discovery Kids. So they already had pretty good home penetration, and you know, they're already available on 60-some% of cable systems in the U.S. I mean,
dude, penetration? Episode 69 was last week, man.
Some things never change.
Yes, Justin Bell, suckling on the teat of the past. So I think a lot of that was just kind of a reflection of Hasbro was pretty cash poor for a little while. Not in any real trouble in terms of what they owned or their properties or things like that, but just didn't have a whole lot of cash liquid ready to throw around. But the Hub has, despite some early warning signs, it's continued to grow, and those ALF reruns are sure going to bring things up where Renegades isn't there anymore.
Who busted out laughing? What's that, Greg?
I think I broke Greg.
He just had his Melmac flashback right there.
I fear for my cats.
He still breaks out in cold sweats when he hears On Wisconsin.
Mike, you have any other news that can break people up at this point before moving on to the next news item?
No, but obviously, again, key to the Hub success, ALF reruns. Down with Renegades, up with ALF.
I can almost agree with that.
I had no idea they were even showing ALF.
That long silence that you just heard, that was me editing out Chuck.
That was Chuck's version of ALF, which just sounds like Chuck trying to be ALF.
Well, you know, in fairness, that's at least what it should sound like.
And now it's going to have to be left in so everyone knows what we're talking about.
Think Major Blood. That's it.
That was Chuck attempting to be ALF. It sounded a lot like, you know,
Chuck
was Louis De Palma from Taxi. No, it doesn't. That wouldn't make any sense at all. But Chuck trying to sound like ALF at least sounded like Chuck trying to sound like ALF. Anyways, next news item. They were the reactions to the in-hand pictures of Pursuit of Cobra Wave 6. Let me just, before we toss this one around, pretty amazing that we had a movie line that got to Wave 6. But how do we feel about those figures now?
It's not a movie line.
Well, no, I guess it wasn't. I guess that would rise a Cobra, but I don't know.
Just a toy line that got to Wave 6. This was it. This was the last wave, wasn't it?
I think some of them hold up pretty well. I mean, when you look at them compared to some of the 30th anniversary figures, it's so funny that figures released 1 year ago can already look so dated. I mean, I still think Crazy Legs was a great figure in that line. I still think the Steel Brigade was a great figure in that line.
Was he Wave 6 or Wave 5?
Actually, that's a good point. I think he was Wave 5.
I think we even ran into that mistake on the pilot.
That's why I was talking about him, because you guys talked about him quite a bit on the pilot episode.
But it was Chuck the one that messed up, so.
Oh, that's true. I should have known better than that.
Yeah.
Why don't you learn, man? To learn these things.
Or at least consult a website.
I'm consulting the website, chill out. Well, the Cobra Viper was a really good version of that Cobra Viper that carried over into the 30th anniversary. That is still probably my favorite version of the Cobra Viper, so can't talk too much crap about that one. Yeah, Crocmaster, no thanks.
The one that we never got the variant of.
Yeah, exactly. Although Hasbro swears we did, but...
That's okay. It could be in a box somewhere, in a warehouse somewhere, and it just hasn't been found by Indiana Jones yet.
Exactly. The Iron Grenadier was so-so. I liked that mold a lot for Destro, for the Iron Grenadier in those colors. It was only kind of okay. Temple Guardian Snake Eyes, again, not even only kind of okay. Really not that great. He came with a bunch of cool masks and heads and stuff. I think Crazy Legs is definitely the shining star of that wave, Crazy Legs and the Cobra Viper.
It's kind of funny.
No, you cannot do this segment as ALF.
Or talk about Steel Brigade.
Well, I did actually do video reviews of some of these guys, and just looking back, having had them in hand, I have to say the Iron Grenadier was really a big disappointment for me, because he looks cool standing still, but if you try to move him, you try to, like, position him any which way. It really doesn't work. The head just pops off of that joint if you try to turn it because of the high collar and that low mass. Crazy Legs is phenomenal, and it's funny, I'm actually now, in honor of this flashback, I'm shooting reviews of the figures I missed from this wave, so it'll go up when this goes up. And Rock Viper is still, like, a great figure.
And, Chuck, if we want to find said reviews, we need to go to where?
YouTube.com/ChuckDog1999. Photographic reviews are out of date. Watch video reviews.
Hey, Greg, want to follow that one up?
I always do. Yeah, I think this, like, Wave 5 and Wave 6 of Pursuit of Cobra kind of laid the groundwork for Hasbro to start thinking, you know what, we don't need to really add any new parts to a figure. If we do some swapping around and do a repaint, we can put it out there, and as long as we're smart about it, we can really produce some great figures. And I think you see that continue on into the 30th line, where some of the figures that would just come out, they would put the head on a different body and then give it a different repaint, and always a different character, pretty much. And then especially with, like, the Dollar General figures, I mean, it doesn't take a lot. The library of parts is there. All it takes is a couple weapons and a decent paint job, and you can really make some great figures that, even though they have the same legs, like the Pursuit of Cobra Snake Eyes legs, they're on tons of figures, but it doesn't matter. They're a great set of legs. They work well. He's got nice gams. And they work
Snake
well
Snake Eyes,
on
he's got the nice gams there. That does sound like someone from Wisconsin saying that.
I can't hide it.
You have some lovely bosoms.
Grief.
What the hell? What did this turn into here?
Two-bit slime show.
Yeah.
I'll just kind of echo what everybody else has had. There very much was a transition going on into what we came to know as the 30th anniversary. I think most of those figures in Wave 5 and 6, they fit into the 30th anniversary line well enough. There's not a real big drop-off in quality necessarily. You can kind of add to your display on the shelf and keep that group a little bit bigger. It certainly leaps and bounds ahead of where we were after the 25th anniversary. And you can already tell a marked difference between those figures in terms of articulation and detail and the movie figures that came out just before it. But as far as, I mean, swapping parts, I mean, they had gotten pretty good at that earlier. I just think of how many times they reused that Flash Hiss Driver body in the 25th anniversary, and it worked. They found new ways, so I don't think it was necessarily that, but we really did see that taken to the nth degree, like Greg said. I mean, you wouldn't think from looking at them that the Cobra Trooper and the Steel Brigade Soldier and the Viper have all basically got the same body with a few swap pieces here and there, but there it is. And so they really fine-tune and hone that craft. And I hope they get back to doing some of that once we get into the later waves of the Retaliation line and beyond.
I'm going to agree with Chuck here.
What the hell's wrong with
shocking,
you?
Isn't it? I know the Rock Viper is pretty unique out of this group. About the only time we really, really saw him. And he still is pretty tough to find to this day.
Very true.
He's kind of like that late Rise of Cobra Kamakura. You know what I'm talking about? I tried to army build him a little bit. It was really tough to track down just a couple.
I found two in the wild and bought them both, and that was the only time I ever saw them.
But typically this wave is often confused with Wave 5, because I think 6 came out before 5, if I remember correctly.
Yes. It got to some markets before and a lot of them after.
So it's kind of a blur. I can agree, it's not that much of a remarkable wave, but the Crazy Legs is good. The Rock Viper is good. Everyone doesn't really care about the Croc Master unless it's that damn variant that everyone is looking out for. And
they only want that variant because they can't find it. That's the only reason.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why it needs to be at Ross so fast.
Temple Guardian Snake Eyes is a neat figure. It's another Snake Eyes. There's some cool stuff going on there. It's a little bit of a different concept. I kind of like that one.
That Snake Eyes coming out in the heels of what everyone calls the Uber Snake Eyes that came with all that gear. It's just like, oh yeah, okay, there's another Snake Eyes. After you come out with like the Ultimate one, at least at that particular time. Now, we're not talking about the Ultimates that are coming out here in the movie line, but we're not talking about that. That was a Pursuit of Cobra Wave 4 Snake Eyes, Justin. Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the news? Is that all we discussed back in the day?
That is the old news, yes.
And that's all the news from Beachhead Mike and What's on Joe Mind.
Old news.
Now get off my lawn.
It's now time for shout-outs and what we got in this week.
This segment of What's on Joe Mind is brought to you by BountyHunterToys.com. BountyHunterToys.com is one of the largest independently owned online vintage toy dealers in Canada. Check out BountyHunterToys.com for their wide selections of all things G.I. Joe, as well as Star Wars, wrestling, He-Man, and Transformers. Need cash? BountyHunterToys.com buys your old toys and trades also. Check them out at BountyHunterToys.com. Like them on Facebook for a 10% discount code and follow them on Twitter today, BountyHunterToys.com. More fun than a poke in the eye.
Let's go with the original cast members to talk about what they got in back at that particular recording, and then we'll also talk with Justin and Mike and see if they can recall anything they got in about that time, and then how does it hold up today. Chuck, what did you get in back in that pilot episode, and how does it hold up today?
I think the big thing I got from that episode was...
Show prep.
I just had his name in my head. Shadow Track.
Okay.
And he holds up quite well, and I think one of the reasons why he holds up quite well is that he's a big featured player in the Joe Collectors Club comic that's every month in a newsletter. And he's just really a cool-looking figure.
Greg.
I know I got parts for a tomahawk, I want to say.
A canopy for a tomahawk.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was going to be a little warped.
Oh, yep.
Now Chuck did a show for us.
Go scratch my ass, Gary.
Now the 10-foot pole, Chuck. Greg, how did that refurb job on that tomahawk hold up? Did you ever get it finished?
Still a work in progress. I ended up buying another whole tomahawk for parts, and now I've been slowly putting them together. But the good news with that slightly warped canopy is that I used a trick I saw in Joe Customs where you use a special type of floor polish that's actually pretty cheap, and then you just stick it in there, and it fills in all the scratches and makes it shiny again, and it actually looks really nice. So that was one of the better things I've managed to do and not screw up custom-wise. So hopefully this winter, if I get some time. Yeah, it's just a clear floor wax, and it fills in the scratches. You set in there for a few minutes. I think it was like $7 for a bottle. You can use it for any sort of clear canopy or windows or anything like that.
Is it also dessert topping?
Yes, multiple.
He's soaking in it.
Good for the pores.
And the thing that I took out of all that is that Greg is available for commission work.
Very slow commission work.
Before I get to my take on that, Justin, back then, what do you recall some stuff that you got in that held up today?
Considering you guys were talking so much about Pursuit of Cobra Wave 6, I can only imagine that's probably some of the stuff that was being released. I got to point out, again, to Crazy Legs as being the highlight of that wave for sure, and was far and away my favorite figure from that series. And I still am looking back at pictures of my review right now, and I'm still just surprised at how terrific the figure is and how well it holds up. Considering, like Greg said, it's just the fact they took all these existing parts and just found a really awesome way to combine them all together. And really, that carries through to this day. I mean, I just barely reviewed a G.I. Joe Retaliation Firefly that's going to come out in one of the 3-packs next year. And it does use a new torso and a new head, but besides that, it's got a lot of the parts from the 30th Anniversary Wave 4 Lifeline, yet with some new paint on it and some new clever accessories on top. It's a brand new spectacular figure, even though it uses a lot of existing parts. I think Hasbro has really perfected that formula, and Greg is absolutely right. It kind of started with these later two Pursuit of Cobra waves. More obviously, they reused parts in previous waves, of course. That's been part of their formula for a long time, but they really, really kind of perfected that with Pursuit of Cobra Wave 5 and 6, and they've carried that through the 30th anniversary and into G.I. Joe Retaliation and are just doing a fantastic job with it. When collectors in general are thrilled about looking at a concept case with these figures in it that are essentially just repaints, there's a few new parts here and there, but essentially the figures in that concept case were mostly repaints, and people were fired up about them. You can tell that Hasbro's kind of got the right formula for doing this.
Mike, what were you doing at the time?
Oh, I don't know, probably some coke.
Coke carry through to today, Mike?
I was
coke you can buy today.
I am still on the buzz.
Who has time for the new stuff? I am still living on that buzz, baby. But no, I was pretty early on the Sky Striker wagon, so it was probably something I was getting about then. Similar late Pursuit of Cobra waves, did not see too much of them where I was at, so I was really starting to just buy those up and gather them like a squirrel with acorns.
Because Mike likes nuts.
I do hug them quite often. That's more of a thank you between me and my creative deity of choice.
Holy God.
Mike, anything else?
I can't remember anything specifically, and f*** you for asking. Crazy.
Thank God we didn't have him on in day one.
Never would have made it past episode 3.
My premonition would have come true back then.
Somewhere around show 6, it would have been renamed into the Mike Hour.
Mike and Chuck Show.
Chuck would have been the first thing to go.
The Mike and Chuck Show with special guest star Tim. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, Greg. Oops, my bad.
Yeah. He's been talking smack all night. I got the Viper. If I didn't get it early, I probably wouldn't even remember anything unique about it. Same thing with the IG. They might have had hub stickers on them. They might not have. I can't remember. I think the big purchase at that time, I got the DTC Crimson His Tank that was canceled. I was a couple days away from that arriving, and I have it now, and it's still here, still in my possession, still have it.
Yeah, what was coming off the slow boat is probably the question for you, Gary.
Yeah, well, the slow boat were the IG and the Viper. Just nothing really remarkable at the time. I think we were just coming back from JoeCon. We were just kind of getting into the show and getting to the swing of things, so I was kind of starting to focus a little bit more on show substance. That was April 2011.
Good to know that you've still been putting that off.
It's on my list of things to do.
Whatever.
Final words before we wrap this up and send it on out of here.
Listening to that first episode was the pilot episode. It's the first time I've listened to it in a long time, as I said. I really just have to say how friendly you guys all were to each other, how kind of the vibe really took off, hit the right foot. I feel pretty privileged that you guys asked me to come on early on in the process and have kind of let me stick around since then, and it's been a really fun ride. It's really great kind of looking back at it and seeing where it all began and seeing where we are now, marveling at the changes that have happened in the online community and the G.I. Joe community and how the show has kind of kept a steady pace throughout all of that. I see big things have already happened, and I see big things continuing to happen, and I really owe Chuck, Greg, and Gary a debt of gratitude for kind of letting me play in their little sandbox here. Mike can go screw himself.
You're welcome.
But no, in all seriousness, you guys were really awesome to me, bringing me on, letting me stick around, and I really owe you guys a lot of thanks. I've been kind of burnt out in a lot of facets of the online fandom over the past year, and this podcast has given me the opportunity to kind of do something different and keep the love alive, so to speak, and I owe you guys a lot for that, so thank you very much, and it's been a great experience so far.
I'd just like to say to Justin and Mike, you're welcome. Justin, for turning your hack site into the hub that it's become by your appearance on this show. I know it took 10 years and, you know, just this, your first appearance in the pitch to shot.
Might have been the funniest thing you said actually ever on the show.
Chuck just brought the lumber out of nowhere.
Whack!
Right upside Justin's shiny dome.
And Mike, just for giving you something to do on a Tuesday night besides watching the paint peel, I know you and social life are perfect strangers.
That would mean something if it wasn't coming from Chuck.
Yeah, that's why I'm not taking it all that seriously.
Well, I mean, I think being on this show is better than hugging your nuts, so.
I don't know about that.
Oh, that's debatable.
You can do both at the same time.
Multitasking. Would that be a mass debate?
What?
Kind of walked into that one.
I'm glad to see that we started with very highbrow, and we've maintained that highbrowness through through so many episodes.
I blame you, Greg.
I want to thank you guys for having me back on again. It's something I really enjoy doing, even though it's more sporadic. I still look forward to it every time. 2012 didn't turn out as expected, but 2013 looks pretty good for Joe, so looking forward to it.
You're going
to
have more Greg in 2012?
It's possible. We'll see if I make it back from New Zealand.
2013. 2012 is over, just about. There's no room for more Greg.
We have that one show, actually. I'm trying to get him on. So, technically, there is more room for more Greg in 2012.
There is always room for more Greg. But anywho, just good, and listening to that pilot episode just proved my point that the driving factor of what's on Joe Mind is the sexual tension between Justin Bell and myself.
Boy, that's like, would sound like a walrus clapping.
Oh, Jesus.
Sweaty man meat parts are.
Oh, my God. Stop.
Good Lord.
It's going to bring new meaning to the word flipper.
Are you done?
Did I ever get started? Go ahead, Gary.
Final thoughts. Thanks to the crew here. Justin, Chuck, Mike, making it out just about every Tuesday. Not so often now, but we're catching back up. Thank you and thank your families for allowing you to do this. Greg, thanks for all the hard effort into those first 40 or so episodes. We hope to have you back for more. Thanks to all the listeners who have continued to listen to this, as Mike called it, 2-Bit Slime Show. Thanks to all our sponsors for contributing and being supporters of the show. Also, I want to thank my wife, as always, for allowing me to do this as often as I do. So that's kind of the final rotation. We've come a long way, still got a long way to go. And every day that we do this, I think I learn something new. So as long as I keep doing that, keep having fun, we'll continue doing these as long as everyone else is up to it.
I look forward to hearing Craig's entry into the Flashback Podcast show rotation. That's what I'm looking forward to most.
So, for our... Do we want to call him our guest showrunner? He didn't really do anything tonight. So, for our guest showrunner, Greg, our real showrunner, Chuck, co-host Justin and Mike, I'm Gary Fenn, and all our men and women serving, God bless, Godspeed, and come home safe. Good night, folks, and thanks for listening to this special edition number 20 of What's On Joe Mine. See ya!
Yeah.
Bye.
Good night. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Sausage Stew.